Good morning. I greet you all in the name of Jesus. It's an honor to be here. Like he said, my name is Cheyenne Gould. I am from Fairford First Nation, where Marty is from as well, so it's nice to see some familiar face. And I'm going to be sharing my story, my testimony today. And this is, like Caleb said, it was literally my first time ever telling my testimony and bringing it to life. And just that morning right before I went to the church there, I just sat down in my chair and I was just writing and writing and writing out my timeline, I guess, of my testimony. And I didn't know what for. And then when I got to the church right away, they're like, "Hey, can you share something with us and on camera?" And so I knew right away what I needed to share and that. So what I call my testimony, my blessed life. I talk about in April 26, 2015, that is when I came back to the Lord. I gave my life back to him. And this, these are pictures that somebody was nice enough to capture for me. And what brought me to the Lord that day was I was in a relationship, and it was really hard. And so I phoned my mom, and I asked her to come and pick me up, and I asked her if she was going to church, and she said, yeah. So I said, okay, come pick me up. I need to go. So we went, and when she came to pick me up, my husband was, you know, we were arguing already, and he was didn't want me to go to church. He was literally, you know, trying to open the door on the truck, and he was swearing, and he was telling me to get out, and I continued to go. So when I got to the church, it was really emotional for me, and when they had the altar call, I went up, and my grandpa there, he asked me if I wanted to bring Jesus into my life, and, you know, without a doubt, I said yes. So he led me into the sinner's prayer, and even by the time I got home, my husband already noticed that something was different with me. And so for a really long time, it was a really bad power struggle. He was jealous because I was going to church more. He thought, you know, why are you loving Jesus so much more than me? And it was really hard. And so I went in August of 2015. We were again struggling. And the day before, I found out that my husband was apparently fooling around on me. And I confronted him and I asked him what happened. And, you know, he denied everything. And then that next day, he didn't come home from work. And I was a bit concerned. And what ended up happening was I received a phone call from him 11 o'clock that night, and he told me that he rolled his hydro truck and that he was in the hospital. And what happened was when my auntie drove me there right away, and we went there, and he confessed to us that he was trying to end his life. And but ironically, just before that, oh, sorry, these are my kids. I'm sure you've seen them running around here earlier. But these are my victory verses that have got me through. So, ironically, in God's timing, just before my husband phoned me, it was like something was telling me, pray for your home. Give your home to the Lord. And so what I did was I asked my grandpa for oil. So he gave me oil, and I went home, and I prayed for every room in my house. I went and I walked outside and prayed all around the house, and I gave my house to the Lord. And just like the verse says, as for me and my home, we will serve the Lord. And so just a few hours after that, that's when I received a phone call that my husband was in an accident. And so I know that, you know, that was God saving him from not fully committing and ending his life at that time. So with that, he was in the hospital, and the next day me and my kids went there, and his parents already picked him up and took him back up north. He's from Nepal. So he phoned me and he says, I'm moving back home. I'm leaving. I'm moving back to my parents' place. I can't live with you in Fairford anymore. And I was really crushed, and, you know, being a first, coming back into the Lord and being a new wife, a Christian woman, I really thought I needed, you know, to be devoted to my husband and try and make this work. So I quit my job as a family enhancement worker with CFS, and me and my children packed up and we moved to the PAW to go and be with my husband and to try and reconciliate and to try and restore. And for a while it was going good, and I, you know, he did come to church with me a few times there, and I really thought like that we were going to become fully restored. And then what ended up happening was I became involved into the Friendship Center in the PAW. And so I had an opportunity to go to Toronto for a workshop, and I brought my husband along. So during our trip there, he started to drink more. And you know, when you're on vacation, you feel like, oh, nobody knows me over here, I can do different things type of thing. And so he was starting to drink more, and I was starting to get worried. And then by the end of our last night in Toronto, we went to a Blue Jays game where he got really drunk. And we went to the hotel, and he was arguing, and he didn't like it when I would give him the silent treatment. Usually I would try avoid him and leave him alone when he's in that kind of state, but that would just aggravate him even more. So in the hotel, it finally got physical. And, you know, I fought for the longest time, for a decade. I thought, I'm not in a domestic violence relationship. It's not physical yet. I kept thinking that it's not physical yet. Even though I know the emotional abuse was there, the verbal abuse was there, the financial abuse was there, even the spiritual abuse was already shown. But I kept thinking, because it wasn't physical, it didn't count. So that night, it finally got physical. And I was laying in bed, and I was just trying to go to sleep, and I was praying, and he was hovering over me, and, you know, he was really making a big scene. And finally, all of a sudden, I just heard a bang, and he just banged my face. And I ran to the bathroom, and I was just bleeding all over. And I sat in the tub, and he came in there, and he's trying to help me and fix me up. And he was saying to me while he was doing that, "You see what you've done? You see what you did to yourself? You did this." So he was blaming me for his actions, his own actions. And right then and there, I prayed to the Lord, and I said, "God, you have to show me. If this is it, I need to see it. I need to see it with my physical eyes. I need to know if this is the end of us. I can't do this anymore." I asked him just to show me. So this verse really helped me. You know, no weapon formed against me will prosper. And it really got me through. And so we came back home to Fairford, and I didn't tell a soul. I didn't tell my mom, my parents, nobody. I finally told one of my closest friends way later, after the fact. And, you know, she was saying, "Cheyenne, it's serious now." And I knew in my heart it was. And a week after that, we were arguing again, and I caught him this time still messaging other women. And so I confronted him once more. And we were sitting at the kitchen table. And my son, who was here earlier, he was on this side, and I was right here, and my husband was over here. And so I was asking him, and we were talking about it and arguing. And right away, he just grabbed his steak knife, and he just put it to his throat. And he says, "Is this what you want me to do? Is this what you want?" And, you know, my son is right there watching everything. And I was able to calm him down and to put his hand down away. And then he just whipped the knife. And he ran into the bathroom, and again, I had to call upon the Lord to help us and to save us and to protect us during this time, that nobody would be hurt. And so he left. And then 2 days after that incident happened, we were at his brother's house, and his other woman messaged him, and she says, "I'm home now, you can come over." And his phone was on the table, and I seen it. And it really hurt me, and we started arguing again about that. So me and my son left the house. And when we returned home, his truck was home in the driveway, but he wasn't home. And I just knew, I just had a gut instinct of that he was there. He was at her house. And she just happened to live right next door, right the driveway over. So I went over to her place, and I left my son in the car, and I told him just to wait. And then when I walked up to her house, as you're walking up to the steps, her living room window was right there, and the blinds were open. And I could see her and my husband sitting there on the couch as he's cuddling her. And I just knew it. It was just like someone was telling me, this is it. This is what you prayed for. So I went into the house, the door was unlocked, I walked inside, and right away my husband was already waiting there, and he grabbed me by my arms, and he's yelling at me to get out of her house, and he's yelling at her to call the cops on me, like as if I was the bad guy. And I, at that time, I had no money to go home, so I asked him, I said, please just give me money to go home, and I'll leave you. I'll let you be. So he did, and I left from there. And it was finally that day I phoned my parents, and I told them everything. Everything that happened in Toronto, which was already a month after. I told them everything, and it felt good. It felt relieved. And then that Sunday, that all happened on a Friday. So that following Sunday, my mom said, okay, we got to go to the PAW. We got to go pick up your stuff. Like, I knew I wasn't going back there. I couldn't go back there. So me and my family took 4 trucks and a trailer, and we went up to the PAW. And the PAW is about 4 hours north from Fairford, where we live. So we went there, and I made a police statement. And I made a police statement about what happened, and I got a protection order on my husband for me and my children. And so we left. And what ended up happening was, a month, 3 weeks after all of that happened, I was served divorce papers and child custody papers. So I really, really had to trust in the Lord with all my heart, and do not lean on your own understanding. I couldn't comprehend it. I didn't know. And I just had to give it to God. I said, Lord, you brought me to it, and you're going to bring me through it. So I was really worried. My worst fear was that I would lose my children to him, and it was really difficult. So I applied for legal aid, and they told me I didn't have a legal aid lawyer by the time the court date. So they told me, just go to court, just tell them you're getting legal counsel, and they will just amend it until the next month. So I thought, okay, easy. I could do that. So I told my family, I'm just going to go to court by myself. It's going to be easy. You don't have to come with me. I'm just going to tell them, you know, that I'm getting legal counsel, and that they will just amend it to the next month. When I got there, it was completely different. My husband, his lawyer, and the judge all had a different plan. That judge put it down on me for walking into the other woman's home, saying I had no right, I was invading. He says I could have been charged for this. He says I left my husband with no notice, I didn't give him any notice, and I should have, he said. Meanwhile, they tell us, when you're in a domestic violence, to safety plan, to make a plan, and to leave when it's right. But this is like as if this judge expected me to write my safety plan and put it on the fridge and let my abuser know when I'm going to leave. And it was really supernatural the way that things happened, the way that I was still victimized. I was still the abuser to them, the bad guy in that courthouse. So that judge only gave me 1 week to find legal counsel and 1 week to file all my paperwork that I needed to file. And that court day, my husband and his girlfriend, she even wrote an affidavit stating that they were not in a romantic relationship. So his whole case was just built on lies after lie after lie. And so it was really hard for me, and I, you know, came home and I told my parents, I can't wait for legal aid. We need to get a lawyer. So with our family help and the community help, they held a silent auction for me, and it was enough to help me retain a lawyer. And so we started the process of the legal fees and stuff like that, and the documents. And it was in October, we had court. October 25th, we finally went to court, and we felt so good. This is just before court. We went and had lunch. We went and met with some family and friends from the PAW, and we all went out and had lunch, and we were trying to have already our victory meal. We thought, you know, we're going to do it. We had no doubt in our heart, and we gave it all to the Lord. And so the judge told us, come back at 1 o'clock, and then I will review his decision. So we went back to court, and what ended up happening was he basically portrayed me as a First Nation woman, moving back to my reserve, leaving my husband with no notice, and now I am trying to live off my husband, who makes over 100 grand a year and works for Manitoba Hydro. So he seen me as just moving back to my reserve and just going to live off him now. And he says, because I didn't give him notice, and because my kids were already established in the PAW and were going to school, and that I moved them prior in the midway, we moved in September, he says, these kids need to come back. So the judge gave me 4 days to return my kids back to their dad. My worst fear was losing my kids. And it happened. So I knew he took my husband, he took my home, he took my job because I had to quit. And now he's taking my kids. And the only thing I had left was my faith. I knew from that point on, no man, no judge, no lawyer, no husband of mine will tell me what to do. And that this judge will not have the final say of my life and of my kids' life, because I know who the real judge is. And it's kind of hard to see, but the people on the way back, right after our court date, I left and I went running into the car, and I just cried and I just gave it all to the Lord. I didn't even ask him why. I just said, get me through. And then we went to the graveyard. The couple in the back there, in 2012, they lost their son to suicide. And their son used to date my sister. So she was only 16 at the time, so it was really hard. And so after my court, we went to the graveyard, to his grave. And we were all standing around there. And it was like a full circle. And it was like God was telling me, it's not done. It could be worse. Be thankful in all circumstances. And then right then and there, I thanked the Lord. Dear Lord, thank you, my children are healthy. Dear Lord, thank you, my children are well. Dear Lord, thank you, my children are alive. And I will get them back. And so it really, even though it was such a hard day for us, it really made us realize it could be worse. We could lose them. And in our history, our Aboriginal history, it was like residential school all over again to me. It felt like they were literally ripping the children out of my home. And, you know, me and my family, my parents are such a good support. We felt like we lost all of our sense of belonging because of our kids. And it made me realize, you know, just how much I was willing to fight for them and to do anything for them. That's what God does for us. He's willing to do anything for his children. So in November of 2016, Marty hosted the first youth encounter conference in Fairford. And there, I literally had to lay it all on the cross. I just gave it all to him. And this verse also got me through it. So do not fear, for I am with you. Do not be dismayed, for I am your God. I will strengthen you and help you. I will uphold you with my righteous right hand. And I just knew, just by his words, you know, nothing comes back a void. And so there we prayed. And just like in Luke 18, always pray, never give up. And that's all I could do. I didn't have my kids anymore. They were now back in the paw, living with their dad, enrolled in school and in daycare. And now, not only did I not have a job, I did not have my kids, but I also had to now pay him child support. And this man who made so much, and me, nothing. But you know, even though I had to pay him and I had nothing, God still provided for me. He still found a way for me to provide to my children. So I was struggling with this, with the whole divorce thing. But I was really grateful because, you know, of this, it says, but if the unbeliever leaves, let him do so. A believing man or woman is not bound in such circumstances. God has called us to live in peace. I was really struggling because, you know, when we often hear about the divorce and the stigma to it, and especially in our churches and stuff, and I, you know, back at home at that time, they were really talking about divorces and how it's so bad and we shouldn't and we gotta fight through it and, you know, work for our marriage and try and restore it. And I thought, God, I already did. I already tried. You're leading me this way. And I know you want me to live in peace and not to be bounded by these chains of violence anymore. So this really helped me get through. In November, I also went to a grief and loss workshop, which is where I met a guy. His name is Andrew Baer, and he is the Aboriginal Mental Health Institute director. So he heard about my situation, and he asked me if I would be willing enough to create a family violence workshop or program. And I took it upon him, and I said, okay, I will. I'll do it. And from then on, I prayed, and I thought hard and how I would go about this. And I started working on the victory workshop. And then During that time, we were supposed to go for pre-trial on December 19th, and my husband got the letter of when we were going for pre-trials. So he calls me up and he says, "What's going on? Why are we going in trial now? I already won. You know, just give up," he's telling me. And I said, "No, I'm not going to give up. Just like God, I'm going to fight for my kids right up until my very last dying day." And he was already flustered because his girlfriend was now getting upset with him because now he was a full-time parent watching his kids, and she wasn't the main focus anymore. And then his job was getting after him because now we had to take back and forth our children. So his work was saying, "Why can't you get someone else to drive your kids to their mom?" And then his legal fees were just raised right off the hop. And, you know, he was struggling with finances now, and then his girlfriend life, and now the kids and the work. So he says, "Okay, fine. If you're not going to give up, then I give up. I'll give the kids back to you." And I just thank the Lord right then and there, because I knew that was the Lord. I knew that God would turn it around. I didn't know how. I didn't know when. I didn't know how he would do it, but it didn't matter, because I know who was going to turn it around, and I know who is going to have the final say. And so I wrote up our separation agreement. I wrote out the times he would see the kids and when I would have them. And 2 days before Christmas, I got my babies back. And so, you know, this is a true verse. Greater is he that is in me. And, you know, I knew that was the Lord softening his heart, that making him see the kids need their mother. And that was the Lord making it a turnaround for me. And so from that, I now have my kids back home with me. They're back home in Fairford. My family is so grateful for them. And, you know, every moment we have, every day is so grateful. Even waking them up in the morning, it's such a blessing now. Before, I used to kind of drag out of bed and get them ready and make their lunches. But now I do it with joy. I do it with so much love. And now I created the Family Victory Workshop. I wanted to change the name from Family Violence. And I prayed, and, you know, how would I make this enlightening and empowering? And it was just like saying to me, Family Victory. And how, you know, from violence to victory. And I knew that was bang on, that was God's words for me. Because no longer am I now a victim, but I am now a victor. And same with my children. You know, God does not want us to be victims and bonded of things, but to be a victor of him, of his peace, and of his love. And so now I get to travel Canada-wide, sharing this good news and how family violence has led me into family victory. That God has put the right people into my life in his timing and has directed me. And just when I thought that this whole trial, that this whole tribulation was a disadvantage, God already knew that this was going to be an advantage for me at the end. Because just when we think that we are in a curse, that we're in a storm, he already knows what the blessing is at the end of it. He already knows what is waiting upon you. That's why he wants you to go through it, not around it, not over it, not under it. We have to go through it. Sometimes we think we don't have the capacity, we don't have the mindset, we don't have the emotions to get through it, but that grace will get us through. That Spirit will give us the tools when we need them at that time to get us through. We might not have it today, but when it's needed, it will come. And so now I get to go to, I'll be starting off in Saskatoon this at the end of this month, delivering my first workshop. And then from there, I go to Thunder Bay. And then I get to go all the way up north to the Whitehorse Yukon. And it's just a blessing that my family already call me a gypsy soul because I'm always on the road. I'm always doing something. So it's just God already knew that this is just my spirit to go around and to travel and to do these things and to talk, to bring a blessing and to bring enlightening on this situation, because there's so many of us that are struggling with violence so subtly. We do it so quietly, and us women are so good at hiding it. And the men too, we really try to hide and think we could do it ourselves. And, you know, when we try to do it ourselves, we bring illness upon ourselves because we're trying to do it ourselves. But when we ask for help and ask God to help us and ask for the right people into our lives, then we will get wellness. We will become well because we are doing it together as we. So, you know, with that, I'm just so grateful that the Lord has brought me to this place that I'm, you know, eventually there'll be a time where I could talk without crying, but I know I'm still kind of healing. It's still fresh, but, you know, I've came so far, and He picked me up, and I held on to my faith, and I just had to give it to God. We just have to give it to Him. And this is the one that got me through the most, is rejoice always, pray without ceasing it. Everything, give thanks, for this is the will of God in Christ Jesus for you. And everything, even the bad times, we have to thank Him. Lord, thank you for bringing me to this. Lord, thank you. I know that you will get me through this. Lord, there's a reason for this, and you know why, and you will bring me to it. We need to thank Him for our good days. But also we need to thank Him even more on the bad days. And, you know, I'm just thankful that I met Roger, then I met Daniel and Caleb. And I already see it now that God is leading me and leading the right people into my life in his timing. And I'm so grateful, and I'm excited for the things that are going to happen and that are coming about. And I just give it all to Him. And, you know, when people say, how did you do it? And I say, it wasn't just me, it was Him. And I tell them, and when I tell my story, they often say, thank you. And I tell them, don't thank me, thank Him. Thank Him for using me to help others. This isn't just for me. God knew that He would use me to help others, and that it's the Spirit that is leading me and will also lead you into the way that you shall go, because He already knows the days of our lives. He already knows what's going to happen. We just have to give Him our full heart and lean onto Him and to His understanding. And so that's the end of my life blessing, my blessed life. And I just thank you all.